Hello, once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, January 7th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 45 minutes or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as I'm joined by one guest. That is Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We're a chat about the divisional round for the NFL playoffs. Talk a little bit about the national championship game, then take a look around the NHL and some golf thoughts. We'll finish up the show with the Sony Open out in Hawaii. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff. Lots of very good writers putting stuff together for you over there. We've got daily NHL from Parker Michaels. Golf now back in swing, obviously. So James Mazzola doing previews for us over at the website. We've got daily NBA and college basketball content. Previews up for all four NFL divisional round games. We've got college football stuff, and we'll have more stuff for you once the prop markets come out here over the weekend. And of course, we cover esports, NASCAR when that rolls back around, UFC coming back around as well. So lots of stuff going on over at bangthebook.com. Make sure you check it all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. One guest on the program here today, and that is Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
All right, Adam. How you doing, buddy?
Doing very well, man. Appreciate your time, as always, here, sir. And lots to get to in the NFL for this weekend, four games in the divisional round. But as always, we'll take a look back at what happened over the weekend during the wild card games, maybe get some ideas about some of these teams here as they head on into their next playoff game. But major takeaways for you from the wild card weekend?
Great games. They were exciting. I think in many respects played out much as we discussed last week. I know for the better part of a month, I've been banging Minnesota's drum, and everybody, you know, looked at the last 2 weeks and, oh, well, Thielen's invisible. And then they, you know, listen, that draw a line through all of that stuff. When Cook is healthy, Thielen is open, you know, and Cousins is a different quarterback. And don't sleep on what Zimmer does. I think this Minnesota team is very dangerous. We talked about playing them as a future play about 3-4 weeks ago. I really believe they can. Now it's a hurdle. Teams are coming off a bye. Those teams earn that right, and they've had great seasons. And then you've got the rust versus, you know, building momentum. I think Minnesota's not afraid to go into San Francisco. I think that's going to be a really, really good football game. The other one, Tennessee, I will say, all I kept hearing, and I just thought, man, I can't get away from what I'm watching, the old eyeball test, bud. You know, it's New England, and it's Belichick and Brady, and they'll find a way. And, well, they were flawed all year long. And if you tell me they weren't playing their lungs out to try to beat Miami, that a bye and being one game away from the Super Bowl wasn't a monster deal for them. And this Tennessee team with Henry, he's a tank. Tennessee's a dead dangerous team. The Seattle-Philly game we thought would be lower scoring and mirror the way the first one went. It went exactly the same way. Didn't expect, you know, Wentz to get hurt. And then the one that obviously gets away was Buffalo. As much as you give Houston all the credit in the world, down 16-0 and coming back, I mean, that was, to me, Buffalo giving that game away. Buffalo was the better team, but Houston advances. Now they go to take on a Kansas City team catching 9.5 points. But sometimes in March Madness, there's always a team goes on a run, and they had some game they survived, and maybe Houston's playing with house money. So we'll see how that pans out.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting weekend. And again, I mean, you know, it sort of felt like some teams lost as opposed to the other team winning. I mean, it kind of felt like that was the way it sort of played out in some of those games. There's certainly that Buffalo game at the forefront of that. And, you know, I just don't get Josh Allen dropping back the throw 46 times. You know,
well,
thank you.
You nailed it. You know, there are people bemoaning the fact the crackback block thing, which is a dumb thing. Yeah, if you're taking a guy's head off his shoulders, but if the guy's running at you, looking at you, but that's not why they lost the game. The thing that just is mind-boggling, and I watch this with Tennessee, do this for long stretches of the season, and then the Bills too. The play calling was an atrocity. You're 9 yards from field goal range, and you come out in a five wide empty backfield. They couldn't stop Singletary. I just give the ball to Singletary, get in field goal range, and get out of there. The play calling was nuts. And Allen made some boneheaded things. I still think the world of this kid. I think he's going to grow into something. He's frustrating. He's exhilarating. You know, he's equal parts, a lot of goofy things. But, that team was dangerous, man, with that defense. But the defense let them down. 3rd and 18. And they did have a couple of injuries, and they had some young guys that were in there. But on 3rd and 18, you play a zone, make them throw the pass, which they did, underneath, and then you run up and make a tackle. Problem was that guys were 25 yards back and on 3rd and 18, and the guy gets the first down by a foot. So, they made mistakes. But and listen, Drew Brees did not have a good game.
No, he didn't. And, Tom Brady didn't have a very good game either. So, a couple of the aging quarterbacks there in the NFL kind of struggling in that first round here of the playoffs. And, a lot of younger quarterbacks now at the forefront here for a lot of these games in the divisional round weekend. But one other big takeaway for me, and, maybe this is something that, we kind of have to take a longer look at here for the divisional round, a lot of questionable coaching decisions, not just with play calling, but especially clock management and game theory. And some of these coaches really did cost their teams last week. Some of them tried to cost their teams, and their players just kind of overcame it. But that'll be something here to watch as we go forward too. Some of these coaching decisions really going to be under the microscope. And, we thought we had some coaching mismatches last week that didn't really play out. We'll see if what appears to be some coaching mismatches this week do actually play out.
Well, I'll throw one at you that I really hadn't even considered. I believe it was Chuck Esposito on Sportsbook Radio yesterday said it. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. What's one of the greatest coaching angles we've had that we've talked about in the last 20 years? I'd thrown a grenade at you. But Andy Reid off a bye. And, we always think about that off the bye week. Well, here's Andy Reid off a bye.
And the thing about it, too, and we'll talk more about this when we get to that game, Andy Reid off of a bye, last 28 games, 23-4-1 to the under. So he obviously has a plan in place. He's prepared for the opponent, and I would certainly expect that he'll be very prepared for the Texans in that one. But let's go ahead and start on Saturday with the first game, 301-302, Minnesota, long cross-country trip out to San Francisco to take on the 49ers. We were mostly 6.5 yesterday throughout the day, but now we're up to a flat 7, pretty much market-wide, total of 45 on this one.
Like Minnesota, I'm all about Minnesota. I think they've got the running game. San Fran has the running game. The thing you get with San Fran is kind of a three-headed running back monster. By the way, Minnesota, from a health perspective, Madison looked good too. So, it's like even if Cook comes out, Madison made plays. So Minnesota finally got healthy at the right time. San Francisco's had a great season. They're home. I mean, everything – you can't knock what they've done all year long. I just think peaking at the right time, I'm not going to get off what we talked about, the myriad of reasons we talked about it for about a month ago. And then you get the last couple of weeks of the regular season where Cook and Madison don't play for a couple of weeks. Thielen is coming back from injury, easing his way back in. And all of a sudden, put Cook and Madison back in the lineup. And who's making the big plays in the passing game is Thielen, because teams are so worried about Diggs. And this is what we said. If you've got Cook, Cousins is a better quarterback. And all of a sudden, and you look at the skill position with Diggs and Thielen and Rudolph, who's a red zone nightmare, this is a dangerous football team. Well, who made the big plays? They're worried about Diggs. Diggs is pouting, by the way. I don't know what it is about wide receivers. You got to babysit them in the middle of games. But they're so worried about Diggs that Thielen and Rudolph killed him. They've got weapons. And I don't think – and Zimmer's that kind of guy, man. I don't think they're walking in there shy at all. And, hey, by the way, Cousins wins a big game. Is he playing with house money a little bit here?
I think that's certainly a possibility. I mean, to me, this handicap comes down to the 49ers defense. I talked ad nauseum on this show and in my stuff over at bangthebook.com about how this 49ers defense was really in free fall mode. I mean, they had that early bye week. They played a lot of tight, lower scoring games early on in the season. This defense was really tasked with a lot to do because Jimmy Garoppolo, he's not going to put up a bunch of explosive plays. He's not going to fill the stat sheet. He'll probably play well more often than not. But you know, this 49ers team early on in the year, they had to win with the defense. And then that dynamic kind of shifted a little bit in the second half of the season where they actually started outscoring teams almost out of necessity because that defense was falling off so much. They got the bye week. They did what they had to do to secure a top two spot in the NFC. Coming off of that bye, is that the refresher that this 49ers defense needs? Because this Minnesota offense at full strength, which it really hasn't been consistently most of the season, is very dangerous, as you just mentioned. So that's the handicap here to me. Do I believe that the 49ers defense can take that time off and really maximize it, get back to what it does well, and come out here and play a very strong game? If you think that's the case, then I think the 49ers can win this game by margin. If you don't, they could very well get upset.
Well, the one, and you're right. I mean, there are a lot of keys. And that's one of them. The other one I would throw at you is, let's see what Garoppolo does here. The Vikings defense forced Breeze into making a lot of mistakes. We've seen at times, you know, Garoppolo can get careless with the football. And you know, by design, their game, if they're running the ball and they're hammering and they're having success on the ground, that offense is a machine. But if this Minnesota defense comes up big, if they force it to have Garoppolo throw, you know, into the 30s, if he's throwing it 30 times, I think that there's a mistake or two out there.
And then one of the things that I'm kind of wondering here is, you know, is this move up from 6.5 to 7 regarding the spot for Minnesota? You know, they play on the road in New Orleans on Sunday, got to go back home after the win. And then you play on Saturday here with a 1:30 Pacific time kickoff. So the early kick on Saturday, you've got to go cross country with the travel after a decent flight from Minnesota down to New Orleans last week. How much of that factors into the handicap here? Is that the reason why, like I just said, we're up at 7 now? And if so, it's the playoffs. Should we really worry about something like that?
Well, I mean, you take it into account. And that's, hey, that's one of the hurdles you have when you're a wild card team. You know you're hitting the bricks and you're on the road. And, you know, the other teams earned the right to, you know, be sitting there waiting for you. So, yeah, I mean, that's another little edge towards San Francisco. I think there's a fine line when a team's off a week like this and it's the playoffs and everybody's sky high, maybe it takes San Francisco a couple of series or something to, you know, to dive back in, or you're overly hyped and you make mistakes, and Minnesota's already they've been at that level for a week, or San Francisco's got all this pent up energy and they come out and they get 14 points in the first 5 minutes. It's part of the Rubik's Cube.
Well, and that's a big thing, too. And that's something we have to look at, obviously, with all the home favorites here this week, is that, you know, they didn't play last week. And in the case of a team like Baltimore, for example, they haven't really played in 2 weeks. I know they beat Pittsburgh with a lot of their backups out there, but, you know, the first team offense didn't play in that game against Pittsburgh. So we're talking about 2 weeks now where they have to try and be sharp here out of the gate. For game 303-304, Titans on the road at the Ravens. 9 is the number pretty much market-wide, total down a point to 47. Sometimes the bye is a good thing. Sometimes the bye is a bad thing. The way Baltimore was playing coming into the playoffs, you kind of wonder if they wanted the week off, but I guess we'll sort of see here in the first half of this one.
Well, in Harbaugh, be it preseason or a meaningless game in week 17, you know, at least they're preparation-wise, whatever it is they do, you know, they're all about winning every time they take the field. So, I mean, you got to give the guy credit for knowing what he's doing. Tennessee's coming in here. Henry's an absolute tank. Tannehill, 72 yards passing, but don't sleep on, you know, the throw he made on third down to ice the game. He's been so accurate. Tennessee's playing at a really high level. The one thing I would think in this game, and I'm trying to take a peek ahead here, wow, it looks like 62 degrees and partly sunny skies. So it looks like it's going to be a gorgeous day. in Baltimore. This is a game I can see going up and down the field. Adam, Henry's just a monster. Tannehill's all of a sudden this week, let's, for argument's sake, they go on the road and they win the game. And they win the game where Brown was invisible. And basically, that was what New England wanted to do. Take Brown out of the game. Can they stop Henry? They looked him right in the eye and said, here he comes. You couldn't stop him. Now, you don't have that kind of scenario with the Ravens where they're going to be able to take Brown away. So all of a sudden, Tennessee's offense is going to be fully in play here. And we know Lamar Jackson can run around like a reindeer and make plays with his feet and his arm. I like this game over. I think it's a high scoring game. I think the number's a little high, but I have to give full respect to Baltimore and the kind of season they had. But I am pretty confident we'll see points on both sides here.
Yeah, I like the over a little bit too. I mean, I would sort of look to go the Baltimore route simply because, like you said, I think this game is up and down the field to a degree. I think both of these teams can put up some yards, put up some points. One big difference is that the Titans were 31st in red zone touchdown percentage against on defense. Baltimore was third. So if you're going to go out there in an arms race against Baltimore and get three when they're getting seven, you're going to make it really, really difficult on yourself to not only pull the upset, but, you know, cover the spread here in this game. Like you said, full complement of weapons for Tennessee. You got two very good coordinators on the offensive side, Art Smith for the Titans, Greg Roman for Baltimore. John Harbaugh, though, just such a great preparer. I think that, you know, we talk about Andy Reid with a bye. John Harbaugh is pretty good off a bye, too. So this is a guy who will have his team fully ready to go. And something else here, too, that I think is kind of worth questioning within this handicap, and maybe this line suggests it to us in and of itself. Is Tennessee good or is New England just not very good? And is Tennessee getting enough respect for that win last week? Or are people just saying, well, yeah, the Patriots aren't very good?
No, Tennessee's good. And I think people were going on this leap of faith that Belichick and Brady would, you know, magically turn the clock back. It's not Tennessee's fault that, you know, New England's offense was flawed. Tennessee's playing good football. I wouldn't make that leap of faith. I think they're going to get their points. I really do. But can Tennessee slow down Baltimore? Does Baltimore just go haywire in terms of covering and winning? I think they both get points. I'm pretty convinced of that. I think they'll go up and down the field. But I would not sell Tennessee short in any fashion.
Well, and I think, too, for Baltimore here, I mean, a couple of different things to consider. One of them is that you've got kind of an interesting little side note here. Dean Pee is the former defensive coordinator of the Ravens. He's the defensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans, but he left before they drafted Lamar Jackson. So this offense, which looks completely different than it did under Joe Flacco, maybe something that Dean Pees does have to dig into a little bit more, although he does know the philosophy and the thought processes of Harbaugh. So that's kind of an interesting little side note here to this one. The other one is for Baltimore here against the run, you know, what do they do to try and slow down Derrick Henry? By the way, Derrick Henry, 66 carries the last two games, going for the rushing title in week 17, 34 for 182 last week, sat out the week 16 game with an injury. So you wonder about Derrick Henry here and maybe if that workload kind of slows him down. But does Baltimore say, you know what, we're going to let Ryan Tannehill try to beat us? And if they do, how does that game plan work out for him? So I think there's a lot of intrigue to this game. I just think Baltimore is all around the better team. And like I said, we'll get sevens instead of threes.
It's a good chess match. Listen, Henry was never hurt in week 16. They were resting him for week 17. Because no matter what happened to them in week 16, they had to win the game in week 17. So they just sat him out. And he'd been questionable for a month with a hamstring. I'm not worried about this guy. I'm worried about the defensive backs are the ones who should be worried. You know, he's stepping in front of this character. He's a beast.
Well, and I guess the other question here is, you know, the Titans defense against Lamar Jackson, how do they fare? You know, Lamar Jackson last year in the playoffs, I don't know how many people remember this, and obviously Baltimore's been so much better offensively. He was terrible. And the one difference is that the Chargers and Ravens had just played in week 16. So the Chargers were able to get a look at this offense. They knew what to expect. They made adjustments, played a lot better. You got to think Lamar's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder here going into this one after how he played in last year's game. Again, one of those intangible, unquantifiable types of factors. But you know, Lamar's progressed as a passer. He's obviously very, very strong as a runner. This may very well be the most exciting game by a large margin of the divisional round, and that wouldn't surprise me at all. But you know, again, I'm kind of curious to see where this number goes because, like you said, a lot of respect out there for Tennessee in the markets. Does this thing come down from 9, or is there enough Baltimore support to keep it up there?
Oh, I got to think, if anything, it comes down a little bit. Tennessee's just playing too well. And listen, Vrabel, you know, we talked about that last week. Vrabel kind of knows Belichick, how he prepares for games. This guy's a pretty cerebral coach, knows what he's doing. If I were him, you know, what I'd be doing, I'd go back. I'd be looking at the film December 8th because there really was, in recent memory here, of one team that kind of bogged Lamar Jackson down. That was the Bills. It was a 24-17 game. I'd be studying that game film left and right and say what, and obviously Buffalo's got a terrific defense, but what did the Bills do that contained him? And I think Tennessee would say, hey, if we can hold Baltimore, you know, your goal is, hey, if you can hold the home team to 17 on the road, you should win the game. And maybe with Baltimore, that's asking a bit too much. But if they only scored 24 in that game, what did Buffalo do that contained them to 24 points? Can we mirror that? Can we hold them to some field goals where they've been getting touchdowns? Maybe it's the difference maker because I'm telling you, Tennessee, Tannehill's playing at a high level. He's playing at a really high level.
All right, so let's move over to Sunday here where the board's kind of lighting up a little bit. Game 305, 306, Houston and Kansas City. A wave of over money hitting the board here as we're recording this Tuesday edition of the show. Up from 50 to 51, 51 with extra juice out there. So seems like 51.5 probably coming sooner rather than later. Kansas City, 9.5-point favorite across most of the market. There are some 10s out there, but this number did move up very quickly on Sunday when it opened. What do you think here? I mean, can Houston keep up with Kansas City?
Well, Houston beat him earlier in the year, 31-24. Watson, obviously, his mobility is a big factor. But, again, it doesn't matter. They're playing. They made it. But, I mean, if you watch that game, it's like the Bills took their foot off the pedal. Watson was getting killed. I mean, do you have it in front of you? I'll look at it. How many sacks did the Bills end up with in that game?
7.
7. And I'm telling you, Watson avoided 6 or 7 more. I mean, making incredible plays with his feet. And then once it was 16-0, instead of still attacking him, they go, you know, all these teams do this. You're like, what are you doing? You're killing them. And then you go and sit back in his zone. Keep killing them. On the road, clearly Watson was running for his life. I'm Kansas City. I'm sending the house at this guy morning, noon, and night. That's a big number. But Andy Reid off a bye, maybe I'm inclined to go where you're coming from, thinking under's the total in this spot. And the crazy thing is, Mahomes this and all the weapons. And, you know, they put LeSean McCoy on the shelf for the last 3 weeks, and he was fine. They said, we want him fresh for the playoffs. They said this 3.5 weeks ago. Could LeSean McCoy, could they actually get a running game going here? And Kansas City's defense is playing at a much better level at the end of the year. I'm kind of leaning under the total. Slight lean to Kansas City, but that's a big number.
It is a big number, but, man, I like Kansas City here. You know, I mean, this is a team that last year, the defense was not good from a yards-per-play standpoint, but they were still pretty good at rushing the passer. Now, they weren't as good at doing that here this year, but the defense has gotten substantially better. They've gotten much better against the pass overall. That was the big key, I think, to Kansas City and why I even made a call that I think Kansas City beats Baltimore in Baltimore next week for the AFC Championship game. I made that call a few weeks ago on the show with Brad Powers because this Kansas City defense got a lot better as the season went along, got very strong late in the year. And we know this offense with Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and all the talent that they have, we know that they're going to get theirs. But this defense getting better has been a really, really big difference. Now, obviously, they did allow 4.9 yards per carry during the season. But the pass defense, sixth in adjusted net yards per pass attempt, 45 sacks, 16 picks. Watson's going to have to throw the football here, and Kansas City's better at defending the pass than they are at defending the run. I don't think Houston stops Kansas City here. I know this is a big number, but I really like the way the Chiefs came into the playoffs. I like the way that they played in Week 17. I like the way they reacted to getting that bye, and I like Andy Reid with extra time to prep against a guy like Bill O'Brien, who tried his damnedest in that game last week to get his team a loss in the first half until Sean McDermott outcoached him in the race for second place in that game. So I think that you've got a situation where Andy Reid has a massive coaching advantage. Deshaun Watson took a bunch of punishment last week. I think this is a boat race. I think Kansas City wins very comfortably here.
Yeah, no, I can completely concur with that. Listen, all signs point to, Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and get the NFL hype machine going.
Well, and I will also say this here. We talked about it. The under 23-4-1 in Andy Reid's last 28 off of a bye. Opponents are scoring about 15 points per game in those situations. If the Texans score 15 points per game, or if the Texans score 15 points in this game, Kansas City's covering the number. So that's kind of the way that I'm looking at this game here. And, you know, again, obviously we'll sort of see what Kansas City looks like as they potentially look ahead to that massive matchup against Baltimore next weekend. One more game here to cover. That is Seattle and Green Bay, game 307-308. Green Bay, 4-point favorite, pretty much market-wide. We're starting to see some fours with extra juice pop up a little bit out there. Total also on the rise for this game, up from 46 to 46 with overjuice or 46.5. What about this one, Brian? Any thoughts on this game?
Well, the funny thing is the Seattle-Philly game, I got to be honest with you, actually kind of was, other than the Bills spitting the bit, was all over all four games last week. And, you know, at the beginning of the week, he's like, I had nothing. I got nothing for you in Seattle-Philly. And then started doing your thing and other things. And wait a second. This is, it's right in front of your face. They already played. It was, 17-9 or whatever the hell the score was. And that game had underwritten all over it. And obviously Wentz got hurt and that sealed the deal. And I had no real opinion on the game, but then kind of worked my way into liking the under. I'm the same way with this game. Looking at it right now, I'm just going to, I don't know. I really don't. But you know what? I do know. I've been watching this all year long. Green Bay starts fast, and then Green Bay, for whatever reason, I don't know if they take their foot off the pedal, or they do stupid things and let teams back in the game. I think I'm looking at Green Bay in the first half. I think that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. You know, of course, you do have the obvious worry here of, Seattle played last week, Green Bay didn't. But at the same time, Seattle's injury report still looks pretty bad. I mean, it's not as bad compared to what it was last week, but it's certainly on that same level here. Whereas Green Bay, Brian Bulaga is the question with a concussion. But other than that, they're not in particularly bad shape here for this one. These are both fade teams to me. I don't really like either one of these teams. I think that Seattle wins because of Russell Wilson, and that's about it. And I think Green Bay wins because, Aaron Rodgers just takes really good care of the football. They don't turn it over.
They got a running game.
Themselves.
They finally have a running game. I mean, the last 10 years, when has Green Bay had a running game?
Yeah, that's true.
They don't need him to throw it 45 times for a change.
Right. Yeah. No.
And let me, I'll say this to you too, but it's funny. Just the way you're talking, I'm saying the same thing. And I done the radio show here yesterday, talking to a bunch of people. Green Bay's 13-3. It's like, how the hell are they 13-3? There's nothing they do that wows you. But here you are, you're two games away with Aaron Rodgers in a running game, playing at Lambeau. But everybody's saying, Green Bay's not that good. They're 13-3. Nobody talks about them.
No, I mean, I think it's one of those things here. I mean, you've got Aaron Rodgers, who's one of the best quarterbacks ever, and you've got 5.4 yards per play on offense. So that's not particularly great. You've been outgained from a yards per play standpoint on the season, 5.7 to 5.4. It doesn't line up with being 13-3. But I think what one of the big keys is, and you keyed in on this already, is that Green Bay is really good in the first quarter. So they get ahead in the first quarter, and they don't hurt themselves in the other three quarters. They don't turn the football over. Aaron Rodgers takes care of the football. And that's what a lot of teams in the NFL have success with, is if they don't hurt themselves, they wait for the other team to hurt themselves. And then they're either able to take advantage or hold on to a lead that they've been able to build. So if Green Bay gets out to that early lead here, they can win this game and cover the number. If they don't, that makes it a lot more difficult for them. So I don't know. I don't really like anything here about this game. I don't like this matchup. I don't really like either one of these teams. I don't think I'm going to play anything here.
Yeah, no, I like the fast start from Green Bay. But I will just say, I think they deserve a boatload of credit, and I think they get none. That, you know, we do this stuff year-round, Adam, and we talk about all this stuff. You know, in the offseason, what did they do? They didn't do anything to help Rodgers. Yeah, you know what? And then we finally come to this epiphany after about 2 months of talking about it after the draft. Well, wait a minute. In free agency and the draft, they went haywire and went to work on the defense. And they're not playing games that are 35-34. I mean, look at their games, 23-20, 23-10, 21-13, 20-15. This defense is sneaky good.
It is. And the defense certainly isn't bad. I mean, maybe the under. Maybe the under is the way that you look to play this. I mean, it's going to be cold. It always is in Green Bay in January. Right now, it doesn't look like precipitation or wind going to be too much of a factor. That could obviously change with us still being 5 days into the game. Yeah, it's going to be cold. And that's not something that Seattle is completely accustomed to. Not something that Russell Wilson's completely accustomed to. A lot of times when Seattle made their playoff runs, they did so with home field. So there's also that that factors into the equation. But maybe that's it. Maybe it's the under. Maybe Green Bay tries to start fast and sit on it. Seattle's just not overly explosive unless it's DK Metcalf. Maybe the under is the look here. I don't like either side. Maybe I go the under, though.
Well, the under makes sense because, honestly, it's a fun story. But, I mean, the Homer kid and Marshawn Lynch, again, Seattle's got no running game. So it's not like they're sitting there putting eight guys in a box to stop a running game. So if they're playing a, you know, two deep zone or whatever to, you know, not let Russell Wilson beat him over the top, and then they're moving the ball a lot, you know, moving up and down the field, but then things tighten up in the red zone. I can see that. It's the toughest of the four to me in terms of having a real opinion.
It is, especially like I said, because I mean, both of these teams are fade teams. So you had a Seattle team that came into the playoffs at 11-5, and they were +7 in point differential, and a Green Bay team that was a misleading 13-3 from a statistical standpoint. So yeah, it is very tough to really fall in love with either one of the sides in that game. So again, maybe the total, possibly the way to take a look at that one. Let's stay on the gridiron here for a minute. Just want to get your thoughts on the national championship game between Clemson and LSU, because by the next time we talk, it'll be the day after the national championship game. LSU 5.5-point favorite in this one, total up in the 69.5 to 70 range. Have you gotten a chance to take a look at this game? What do you think about it?
At first blush, Orgeron's a great story, colorful guy, hard not to root for him. Burrow is, come on. 7 touchdowns in the semis. It's ridiculous. Clemson has won, 29 in a row, and Lawrence has never lost. The coach has been there and done that. They showed a lot of grit, and they came back against Ohio State. And I think there were many that felt Ohio State was the best team in the country. The number to me, I don't know. I mean, and then you stomp on Oklahoma. Now, okay, we always kind of poke holes at the Big 12 on an annual basis. You know, can they step up to the plate in a big game? And they got throttled. And I think the number's high. There's nothing to me that says that this shouldn't be a terrific football game. And the Lawrence kids never lost a game.
Well, and again, I mean, like we've beaten the drum about here so far regarding the national championship game, I mean, this is not what this line looks like before the semifinals. This is, if you factor in home field for LSU with a couple of points playing in New Orleans, this line's probably a pick'em before Clemson struggled with Ohio State and LSU blew out Oklahoma. So massive overreaction here in this line. Again, I don't know for sure that Clemson's going to cover. Wouldn't surprise me if LSU covers. But again, just from a line value standpoint, you're getting a pretty good price on Clemson relative to what this would have been from a look-ahead standpoint. So there is that. We'll see what this line looks like as we get closer to kickoff. And, of course, again, a lot of prop markets for the national championship game. I'm sure you'll talk about that on Sportsbook Radio with the sportsbook directors that you have on. But that's another way to bet this game, and maybe the better way to bet this game.
Well, the one thing that I don't think anybody's talking about, and again, when it's a game and you start diving into all aspects of the game, but, you know, Clemson beat Ohio State 29-23. 23 points is the most Clemson allowed all year long. No, I mean, it's the quarterbacks, you know, and it's all the skill guys and the coaches and the quarterbacks and getting all the buzz. This Clemson defense is a machine. This Clemson defense put a lot of guys in the NFL. I mean, the key to this game may be Clemson's defense. If you sit there and look all season long, what you talk to me about the quality of the schedule they played, but I mean, you held Ohio State to 23, and that's the most they've allowed all year long. Yeah, Burrow's having a great year, but the key to the game may be Clemson's defense.
Yeah, it definitely could be. And again, we'll talk more about this game here as the week goes along. But want to make sure to talk some NHL with you here today, Brian. Big Tuesday night card, whole bunch of games going on. A situation in Nashville where they fire Peter Laviolette. Now they've got John Hines coming in. Nashville takes on Boston here tonight. Another interesting side note about that game that we'll touch on here in a minute. But anything else that you're looking at here tonight on the Tuesday card that you want to play?
Arizona... by necessity has had to open things up, and they've had injuries at the goaltending position, but it's kind of freed them up. And this team's unbelievable. They win five in a row or they lose five in a row, but at the end of the day, it's still adding up the good points and they're in a good spot. But currently this is a team that's producing offensively. They beat St. Louis 3-1. They beat the Ducks 4-2. They beat the Flyers 6-2. Now you're starting a road trip against a Florida team that does nothing other than score and be sloppy in their own end with sketchy goaltending. I like Arizona and Florida over the total tonight. And buddy, if I could, I would throw this out there. And this is one, we do our stuff on Tuesday, so this was not one we could have talked about last week. But this league and betting hockey, just in generic form, the angles that are in play, first game home from a long road trip, ceremony games, all the things that just, it doesn't matter who the teams are, it's all about situations. Here's one like where something is just falls right in your lap. It was a gift from the gods, does nobody any good today, but it was something that we were able to talk about here Thursday and Friday last week, and that was Florida was playing Buffalo, and it was supposed to be a 7 p.m. Eastern start. Well, the Bills are playing the Texans in the playoffs. So the Sabres went to the Panthers and said, would you be willing to move the game to 1 in the afternoon so our fans can get out of here and then race home and go see the Bills game? And Florida said, absolutely. Well, Florida could give a rat's ass about the Sabres fans catching the Bills game. They didn't do it to be nice to the Sabres. They did it because it was a home run for them. So sure enough, they moved the game early afternoon. Buffalo's up 3-0. They pull Bobrovsky early in the game. None of it was his fault, but they pulled him, which even enhanced what we were talking about, because the situation was that game was going to be done, and they made a big push, came back, and lost 3-2. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere, what was a nothing burger from a scheduling perspective, all of a sudden, Pittsburgh's playing that game, showering, 15-minute ride to the airport, 30-minute ride to Pittsburgh. All of a sudden, Florida was going to be checked into their hotel in Pittsburgh, sitting down and starting to eat dinner when they were supposed to be playing a hockey game at that time, while Pittsburgh was dropping the puck and playing in Montreal. So out of nowhere, Florida's sitting in Pittsburgh waiting for them, and it was a 5 p.m. early start the next day. Bingo, monster advantage, Florida, and Florida's catching plus $1.40. And they stepped on Pittsburgh's neck. That is the beauty of hockey, that there are these opportunities. It doesn't matter who the teams are. It's just the opportunities that are out there on a weekly basis, on a daily basis almost. It's the best sport to bet by a mile.
Yeah, and, you know, I've been talking a little bit about, you know, my uncertainty about some situational spots in some of the different sports that are out there. I don't have that uncertainty in hockey. I have it in the NFL. I have it in college football. And even to a degree, college basketball, where guys have 4 or 5 days off to get back on track. Those things don't matter as much. In the NHL, they do. Last night, I wrote about 2 games in my situational article. Edmonton at Toronto, Columbus at Los Angeles. Edmonton was on hockey night in Canada at home on December 14th and lost to Toronto 4-1. Now they play in Toronto in the middle of a road trip. I figured we'd get a max effort from the Oilers. They win 6-4 last night. McDavid scores one of the sickest goals I've ever seen. Columbus starting a road trip out in California. Bunch of injuries. Rallying around Elvis Merzlikins. They win the game 4-2. Talked about both of those games in my situational article yesterday. Arizona and Florida tonight, one you just mentioned. Coyotes starting a road trip. Florida first game back off the road trip. We talk about that angle all the time here on the show. These things in the NHL are very, very real. And they have played out a lot for us. And hopefully they continue to do so. But I mean, these angles are so strong in the NHL.
All right, and there are two, and I know you were going to mention it, but one could offset the other. You've got Boston with the Moms trip, and it's a one-day hop for them. Most teams do 2 games, and it's the Moms. I like the Dad's trip better because the Moms, you know, after a game, the Moms would go, "Oh, honey, you played a good game," and the Dad would go, "What the hell's wrong with you?" You know, so, am I right? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. So, you know, okay, whatever. It's a nice thing. But Nashville's first game, they fired their coach. I don't know. That one offsets the other. In Boston's a quality team, but not playing their best at the moment. But the other one, Bud, we'll throw this out there. Calgary, they're on their Dad's trip. And Calgary won the first game of the Dad's trip, came from behind in Minnesota, won in a shootout, and now it's the second game of the Dad's trip. And Calgary's a 25-cent favorite at Chicago. Probably have to, I would say, like Calgary. Just you're going to play that.
Yeah, I like Calgary here, too, especially because Calgary lost at home to Chicago last week. So rapid revenge angle for them, too, where they can get back those 2 points that they lost, and they also have the Dads on hand tonight. One other one I would kind of look at here, Columbus and Anaheim tonight. Big win for the Blue Jackets last night. Again, their injury reports all over the place, particularly at goaltender now with Jonas Korpisalo out. Matisse Kivlenix is the backup. He's never played an NHL game. I don't know if he gets the nod tonight. It hasn't been confirmed. But if he goes tonight, that's going to be kind of an interesting one because a lot of times when you get an inexperienced backup, people are going to sit there and say, oh, this is going to be an over. This kid's not going to play well. He's going to have all the nerves, this and that. Well, the team collapses and plays down in front of him in the defensive zone. So I don't know how Kivlenix plays tonight if he gets the nod. But that's a spot where maybe Columbus really buttons up defensively, tries to ugly that game up quite a bit, especially in a back-to-back. So there's some food for thought in that one, depending on how the goaltender rotation works out.
Good stuff. Yeah, no, I watched the tail end of the Columbus game with the Kings last night, and it wasn't a pretty game at all. But that's Columbus's game. I mean, you know, I mean, it's a whole different thing you're dealing with. When you're talking about Columbus now last year, having gone for it, and it's a different roster. And I think Tortorella is still a work in progress. And I think, you know, they've responded to what Tortorella is doing. And, you know, think he's doing a pretty good job there. They're still in the discussion.
All right, so let's talk golf to finish up this segment here. We'll go out to Hawaii, something that you and I both wish we could do right now. For the Sony Open, pretty interesting ending to the Tournament of Champions over there. But now we've got the Sony, and Justin Thomas, a massive 5-1 favorite here. Webb Simpson, Patrick Reed, Matsuyama, Morikawa, the shorter prices that are out there. Anybody that you've got your eye on here this week?
Yeah, I mean, I always have a plan of attack usually when I do this, and I'm looking for a guy that plays well on the weekend, you know, maybe comes off the shelf, starts slow at the Tournament Champions and gets his act together. But the crazy thing, I think 23 of the 34 guys that played in Kapalua are actually coming over to play in this, and that's more than normal. Thomas owns Hawaii. Makes sense. He gritted it out. He won. He played a great round of golf, but then the wheels came off kind of at the end, but he still found a way to win. So it's hard to fathom. He's not in the discussion. Again, I don't understand Webb Simpson at 12-1. But the guy I was looking at, the price is ridiculous. Come on. I mean, you know, he's still trying to figure out how to do it, but he lives there. His family lives there. And he would have been the guy I picked just based on what I was looking for, and that was Colin Morikawa. Played good on the weekend, and so he's going to have home support and all this other stuff. At 18-1, the price sucks. But I would look at Colin Morikawa. Annually, there's two guys always play well in at the Sony. Charles Howell III always shows up, you know, but how often does he win? Zach Johnson always plays well there. So I'd be looking at a guy like Zach Johnson. I'm wondering about a guy like Snedeker off the shelf, but the other guy would be Rory Sabatini at 90-1. He used to live in Hawaii, plays pretty well over there, and I think he's a different golfer. I thought he had a great season last year, and it's the most annoying thing in the world to watch a guy playing golf with a range ball. You know, he's out there playing with a yellow golf ball. Like, but in this instance, I'll be looking for the yellow golf ball. I'm going to play Rory Sabatini.
Yeah, and something I saw here, as you mentioned, 23 of the 34 from last week playing over in the Sony Open. I've seen a lot of people tipping Corey Connors, actually, this week, somebody that's been pretty popular out there in the Twitterverse. But you know, you want to find guys that, you know, you talked about this last week with regards to the Sony. Find guys that played well the last couple days there at Kapalua, because they're probably going to carry it over here. I mean, hell, who doesn't want a week in Hawaii? You know, I mean, you got to be playing free and easy heading into this thing if you've been out there. So a lot of angles for this tournament, for sure.
And the one guy to watch, and I mean, believe me, I burned a lot of money on this kid last year. He's always there, and he always shot himself out with one or two bad holes, was Sung J.M. Well, I will say this. I mean, he had a great season. He's Rookie of the Year. But I think the way this kid came through and the experience he gained in the President's Cup, Sung J.M.'s going to kick the door down here, I would believe, pretty soon.
Yeah, definitely one to look at here. Of course, his price 20-1, so we're not getting the same great prices we were getting on him, but there should be some more opportunities here, especially when we get into some stronger fields, like maybe one of the majors or something like that. Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how can people check out those two shows of yours?
Appreciate that, bud. KSHP.com. Invite you to check that out. And follow me on Twitter, at Brian Blessing. Actually working on a new thing with a good friend, Cam Stewart, which is cool. I think it, for hockey fans, the stuff we do here on my Twitter, I'll put it out. We're doing it a couple days a week called the Hockey Betting Podcast, something new we're doing. Think you'll get a kick out of that. And, you know, the bottom line is we've got the odds makers. Today we got Tony Neville from TI, Tony Miller from the Golden Nugget on today, and Vegas Hockey Hotline, 1 p.m. Pacific time. All things NHL, very Golden Knights-centric, but we do touch on the betting side of things as well. So that's at KSHP.com, and we'll be getting out and doing videos for you as well, Adam, on the football games and the golf this week at Bang the Book.
Well, definitely make sure you follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Blessing and check out Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline over at KSHP.com. Brian, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me here, buddy. I hope you can kick that flu and we'll talk to you again next week.
You're the best, bud. I love doing it. Have a good week.
There you go. There's Brian Blessing again, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, KSHP.com, at Brian Blessing on Twitter, and be on the lookout over on our Bang the Book YouTube page for those football playoff preview videos. We'll have another edition of Bang the Book Radio coming up here on Wednesday. Not exactly sure who's going to join me as of yet, but we will be on the air Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to fill out the week. So make sure you listen in for that. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.